You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
The Around the NFL Podcast. We'll beat your kid at Madden.
Hell yeah. From the Chris Wessling Podcast Studio, it's Around the NFL. It is the Week 9 preview. And Draft Dan has us here. Heroes, Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler. This is it, Mark. This is the end of the season. Psych, it's not even halfway, but we're getting closer to halfway.
It is close to halfway, which would suggest that, you know, it'd be broken up by a lengthy intermission or halftime
or a rest.
But it's not going to be. It just keeps barreling on, and I'm so excited that it does.
Right. It almost feels like it's starting this week. It's like we got the first.
Well, it's almost Thanksgiving. Coach, that's the start.
Yeah. Right. We got the first coach firing. We got the first, like, week of games where it's like, ooh, this is like a big, juicy, meaningful week of games where there's some weight to it.
Well, I think the true sign of a season getting up there in mileage is when you start seeing games where both teams are just like, bye-bye.
Yeah, it's checked out.
When we get to the play-out-the-string games late in the season, but, you know, if we keep adding playoff teams, that will never happen either. We have a lot to get to today because we're going to... ahead of our draft preview, the Germany game, which is a corker. We got some primetime games to hit that we usually hit in the middle of the week, but the schedule is a little funky because of the trade deadline. B-. But first, let's start with the firing. This went down poorly timed for us during a dark period on
Tuesday.
We got
pantsed.
We got pantsed big time. Mark Davis, after we kind of flashpoint focused it a little bit, not an official episode, no. So I don't want to take credit for it.
But almost like a workshop of where we were going
right.
to go with that.
Once again, it shows that ability to have a vision over visibility, that the Raiders stew was toxic and something big was happening. And then 24 hours later, Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, decides, I'm done. I'm getting out on the Josh McDaniels era. I'm getting out on the Ziegler era. So he fires the head coach and the general manager. He told ESPN on Wednesday, unfortunately, I had great hopes for Josh and Dave. It just seemed we were going in the wrong direction. So with the trade deadline, I just felt like it was time to make a change, time to make a move. I don't know. There's something about... It's like talking about your college buddies at the dorm. Unfortunately, I had great hopes for Josh and Dave. Just couldn't make it. Josh and Dave didn't make it. So there we are. They're starting over. And how much are they starting over? Rap Sheet then reported later in the day that Jimmy G, he also...
He gone.
He's going to the bench after just a pathetic Monday night showing. And now it is Aiden O'Connell's team, probably for the rest of the year. Greg... a total implosion like the old casinos in Vegas.
I've been fascinated with some of the day after reporting. Vic Tafer, who we've talked about at The Athletic, had some really good stuff where Mark Davis just thought, where is this empty confidence coming from with Josh McDaniels and Ziegler? And at a certain point, he realized, oh, these guys actually don't know what they're talking about. And it is sad that the Belichick coaching trees had some tough moments. I mean, they had the coach of the year a year ago, Brian Daboll, if you want to count that. He was there for 10 years. But Josh McDaniels going
we'll
out.
We'll count it.
Well, going out.
We must.
Sad. With that, ultimately, him starting Brian Hoyer in a game against Tyson Bajan's Bears is what got Josh McDaniels fired. Because he was living in his fears. He didn't start O'Connell, which Mark Davis clearly wanted him to do. He thought it would be the safer move, and you lost by 3 scores to Tyson Bajan. And that is sort of the way you get fired. And that it's like, this is going to be his last chance to ever be a coach. That's a sad way to go out. The whole run was sad for Josh McDaniels.
I think the thing about Josh McDaniels, you know, being at multiple Patriots Super Bowls where you'd be at those media days, and there were a lot of these Q&As with Josh McDaniels where he talked about coming out of the Broncos apocalypse, which was one of the most disastrous coaching runs we've ever seen, that he had grown, that he had changed, that he saw through new eyes. And I feel like this Raiders run, which also included him losing to Jeff Saturday in a disaster. I mean, talk about a fireable offense, but it was just too early in the fact that, you know, Mark Davis has to pay him for another 5 years. It's no new ideas. Old faces from his past, guys like Brian Hoyer, who had no reason to be on the field, and an offense that couldn't get out of its own way, and in front office that, like, we're going to move on from Derek Carr. We're going to bring in Jimmy G. I think Derek Carr had a little bit to do with Mark Davis as well, obviously. But it's like, what was the vision? What was the plan? And, you know, I thought the one drumbeat of critiquing the Raiders is that they're a proud fan base. And I like Raiders fans in general, the concept of them. Like, come at you, be like, you can't talk, like, negatively about our team. You don't see what we see. It's like, we saw all along what the owner's seen. It's like, what he called a regression. And they regressed. They were regressing before our eyes into something unwatchable. Well,
in fairness to fans, it's not all of them weren't like that. In fact, a couple weeks ago, you might remember a fan screaming at Mark Davis from the seats,
no,
saying,
not all the fans,
fire Josh McDaniels. There's a lot of Raiders fans who are pulling out their hair about how poorly the team has been run. And that goes right down to the way this played out. It's crazy to me that a team that obviously now is saying we are starting over, they have highly tradable assets like Devontae Adams, Josh Jacobs, even Jimmy G, for a team that might be looking to add a veteran quarterback who's had success in the league. And this is a report out there, when teams were calling on Tuesday, it was ghost. There was no interaction because the owner was busy firing everyone. And I understand you don't want maybe the GM that you're firing to be making trades like this, but somebody's got to pick up the dial and potentially move a guy like Adams or this or that. And obviously they didn't want to. But again, it shows, Greg, one thing, that the frustration from me from afar is like, this team does need to go all in on a rebuild and do it the right way. And passing up on the chance to pick up first round picks potentially at the trade deadline shows, again, there's just this, like, they're kind of in between. It's a half measure type team all the way around.
Well, that's more on the ownership and the timing of all of this and not making them do that. You're absolutely right. But you look at the moves that McDaniels made. Bill Barnwell pointed this out and thought it was well put. Chandler Jones, Derek Carr, Darren Waller, Hunter Renfro. All of those guys got either big contract extensions or, in Chandler Jones's case, a big new contract. None of them lasted there. So they changed their mind within like a year. Renfro actually is there. It just seems like he's not there. The Devontae Adams move is the only one that, you know, I don't think it was a disaster for them, but they also traded their first and second round picks and they got nothing out of their rookies last year. So at least the Raiders fans are going to love them up some Antonio Pierce. He is very different than their last interim coach, Rich Bisacci, but he's got such an interim coach vibe that everyone's going to love saying he grew up, you know, in Compton wearing the NWA hats, like repping the Raiders. He's Raider for life. And just like listening to him talk, I feel like
he's, any coach,
who knows, but I feel like he's going to have some fun Joe Vitt or Dan Campbell interim head coach
Dolphins
energy,
yeah,
with just like lots of ups and downs where he's making speeches.
And they fire the OC as well.
But yeah, Mick Lombardi, so the son of Mike Lombardi.
The whole thing is, and we've seen this happen, I mean, the Colts did it last year and then brought in the TV analyst, former center. So it's like, yeah, you can make it through a season, but this could get very...
Well, at least these guys are, you know, the guys who are taking over were coaches.
Right. I think Antonio...
On the staff.
Antonio Pierce is intriguing. It's not a Jeff Saturday situation on any level. It's like, but these are the coaches that have been Raiders coaches under Mark Davis. Hugh Jackson, Dennis Allen, Jack Del Rio, the John Gruden thing, and Josh McDaniels. It's like, I guess if you're a Raiders fan... This team that's quietly been in the darkness, like in a way that like it doesn't match up with the way they self-promote themselves as an organization historically. Like, do you trust this ownership group or the owner to go find the next head coach that you could that shows some vision? I think that's the heart of the issue, is like Mark Davis becoming fascinated with the incorrect people.
Yep. Kept Bisacci.
Could have
given it a shot. I mean, it was literally their best stretch of football since Mark Davis took over. It's not an exaggeration.
And, you know, it's ancient history. And Gruden, I mean, he got himself run out of the league, run out of the head coaching world. Like, they were a functional team on a better track when he was there. And then once he gets himself run, it leads to Bisacci. But it kind of, like, they gave him a 10-year contract. The idea was that Gruden was going to be the guy that oversaw this whole thing. So they're still kind of recovering.
He's going to be paying McDaniels and John Gruden for the next few years.
Can someone explain to me why
four more years for
NFL players, star players, average players, guys that are hanging on? They essentially are paycheck to paycheck for the most point, for the most part, or year to year. And Jim Tomsula for the Niners gets paid 6 years or whatever, or Josh McDaniels is going to get. Why all this? Why do these guys get these insane, fully guaranteed deals and the players don't?
You don't want to ask too many questions here. Like, why does the NFL have an antitrust exemption? Like, all of this has worked to making the league a powerful place.
That feels like a long form for you, potentially, Dan.
I'm gonna send it back your way because everyone's waiting for your next one.
I'm gonna work on that.
NFL players have less power than any other players in any sport, and unfortunately, that's one of the reasons I think the NFL has become. You know, it's like. It's unfortunate.
I can think of one player who, no matter what or how he performs, will be getting a lot of guaranteed money for a long time.
Mm, good tease.
Oh.
Certain quarterback. That was a contract outlier that didn't create a new trend.
Got
it. To your point, there's like the other sports, the players are fine.
Here's the other side of it, because this is funny because I have some, you know, Laker fan buddies. The Lakers had decided that LeBron would be on a minutes clock account this season because he's 39 years old, and they played one game to the season opener, and he played 29 minutes and they lost and faded in the fourth quarter. And LeBron's like, we're not doing that anymore. And LeBron's also the GM of the Lakers de facto. So yes, there's two sides of it. That's the NBA.
But that's a fun side. At least he's out there.
I'm just saying,
game-winning buckets.
These are the opposite sides. You know? Yeah.
LeBron, I guess be careful what you're requesting on some level.
Right. Okay. Let's see.
Football is completely different than basketball.
I just thought it was funny. Like, it's an 82 game season in the NBA,
right?
And they had this plan that the whole summer was about talking about it.
Yeah,
he plays one game, and he's like, "Nah, we ain't doing it, Coach." He's also the head coach, LeBron, by the way, de facto. All right,
too powerful.
Let's get to the Frankfurt game. Anybody ever been to Germany, by the way?
You know that I've been to Germany. I've told you that about 1,000 times.
All right.
You
did the trip. Did you go to Frankfurt?
We did not go to Frankfurt, but, you know, all sorts of little towns throughout Germany.
Unbelievable.
It was an NFL tour.
You can check it out on NFL.com somewhere, maybe.
Yeah, you could find it.
You became best friends with Mark Ingram, I recall.
These were all temporary friendships. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm not there. I don't wish them all well, or vice versa. But it's like there was a text thread that about 4 weeks after the trip, they were like, Mark Ingram was like, all right, guys, this text thread's over now.
Oh, he ended it.
Kind of, and it made sense. It was like, we're not asking what date we're at the airport and stuff.
I love a Frank person, you know? He's just bringing the reality to the situation.
He was.
Well, it's funny because he could have just ghosted it, right?
Right.
But he went out of the way to be like, this is over.
Yeah. I look back and wonder if maybe one or two of my texts triggered that disinvite.
Were you,
I don't think so.
Were you just trying to keep the flame burning after the trip?
I don't think so.
It's like sending
pictures. That.
Remember the time we were at the bar?
Bratwurst and brews. Remember?
I don't do that.
Sitting at the bench?
I try not
chopping it up about the old ball game?
Mark with a C.
It's over, Mark.
Socially dumb. No.
All right, let's talk about it because it's a banger. It could be the game of the year. It has that type of potential. It's time for the first game presented by DraftKings. And it is the Miami Dolphins against the Kansas City Chiefs in Germany. Oh, my goodness. Over under 50.5. Chiefs laying 1 point of wood here. That surprised me right off the bat, and it's a lot of respect for Patrick Mahomes.
What, that the Chiefs are favored?
A little bit.
I thought it was surprising they're only by one.
Just because, I had some Chiefs fans who were getting on me a little bit after the podcast last week. Like, how come you're not factoring that Patrick Mahomes had the flu or whatever? And it's fair. I tend to not take that as seriously with these athletes because so many times we hear, he had the flu and then throws for 412 yards. And it's like, I guess it's a different flu than I get when I'm literally dying. But yeah. Mahomes played poorly. He turned the ball over. In general, it felt like the Chiefs just were sleepwalking through that game against the Broncos. And Denver, to their credit, executed and pulled off the upset. So I guess my surprise, Greg, is that the Chiefs looked so mortal last week against a sub-500 opponent. And the Dolphins, man, are you telling me the Dolphins aren't going to light it up in Germany? I think they could.
Well, it's such a different matchup. I think the Broncos defense has played the Chiefs tough twice in 3 weeks. Like, we saw it before. We saw it on Thursday Night Football. Dolphins defense has been getting better, certainly, since Jalen Phillips returned. But I don't think of them as a difference-making defense. The thing about, you know, blaming it on the flu is I've just never seen Patrick Mahomes, and this is something you can see, especially in the coach's film, just not see anyone open. Because his offensive line is first in the league in pass block win rate. And they dominated the Broncos up front. The Chiefs' offensive line destroyed the Broncos' pass rush last week. They destroyed him. Patrick Mahomes is sitting back there all day, just chilling, looking for someone to throw to. Does the flu, like, make him not throw it? I don't think so. Like, there just aren't guys open. And so it is truly shocking to me to see an offensive line this good, coached by a team with Andy Reid and quarterback by Patrick Mahomes, and yet you're just not finding players open, except some weeks Mahomes kind of runs around and goes to the line of scrimmage and he creates a play on his own. But the timing, like, of these two offenses could not be more diametrically opposed. The Dolphins have the best timing and rhythm in the entire NFL. Patrick Mahomes is hitting almost nothing at the back of his drop and letting the ball go.
Yeah, and that line is one of the only lines in the league that has had every starter play the entire way, and he has been well protected. And, you know, by every metric, this Chiefs offense is the worst that we've seen in the Mahomes era. And it looks like it. And I think last year it was like there was a lot of hemming and hawing about who they could become, and they worked their way out of it. And I think it's fascinating that, like, this is the week that, you know, and I like that it's in Germany and that's great for our world and all of that. But were it Tyreek Hill going to Kansas City, there'd be a little bit of extra juice here, because I think this offense clearly misses, like, a game-breaking type talent. Now, it doesn't have to be Tyreek Hill, but they haven't replaced that, what he brought to that offense on any level. And it's like they look a little mystified to me in the through the air. And now it's like you have their defense is their strength. And their passing defense has been really great. And so can you go do to the Dolphins what a couple other teams have been able to do to slow down what is an electric air attack?
For what it's worth, they are fifth in offensive DVOA, fifth in defense. They're the only team other than the Ravens to be top five in both. So their offense actually has moved the ball and had some big games.
That's the thing that keeps their statistics from getting into a funky spot, because when they do flash like they did the week before, you're just gonna be jumping teams because they have that gear sometimes. But, like, I brought this up before, Mark, you're right about the Tyreek thing, but this isn't the first year Tyreek isn't around. Last year they had Juju Smith-Schuster and Mahomes threw for like 5,000 yards. And
I think they're
MVP
missing that extra.
I don't know, because, like, even
who is it?
Rice kind of is Juju at this point. I'm not saying that Rashee
Rice
is much worse.
But that's my question.
Rest of everything, right?
So
it's
like,
everything
if
else.
The offensive line is healthy and Mahomes is healthy, and Rice has really kind of emerged as a guy that at Juju Smith Schuster, like, he's not an elite guy. So it's like that's Kadarius Toney was there last year and didn't really flash. Travis Kelce has been quiet for about half the season, and then Travis Kelce. So he's not quite the same guy, but I think I'm still struggling a little bit to wrap my head around why the offense is taking such a big
they
step.
They do have the fourth most drops in the league. Like, little things like that in certain moments can matter, but then it's like, do you turn around and point the finger at Mahomes? Like, I struggle to do that.
No, I think it's just a lot of things being true, and maybe it's defenses having a better idea how to slow them down.
Or a small sample size. It's
right.
Still,
right,
we've only
right
seen.
It is another
games
year of no Tyreek Hill, and you're right. Defensive coordinators could learn more.
Jalen Ramsey returning was a big deal for the Dolphins last week. It wasn't just the interception. He made a couple nice plays. In theory, he helps unlock that defense. Xavien Howard might also return this week. They've had some injuries at safety, so they're getting a little healthier on defense. And that has to feel good. And then you flip around, and I just wonder, Spagnuolo and this defense, they've been really good. This is a big-time test for them. Can he scramble the mainframe with Tua? Because Tua's playing very well, but about once a game, he almost predetermines what he's going to do, and he has so much confidence and in the system and the timing that he, like, doesn't consider that it might not work, and he just throws to a spot. And it's like, can Spagnuolo get his cornerbacks and his safeties to that spot? Because Tua's had a lot of interceptions this year. Is it nine? Is it nine turnover-worthy plays? Whatever it is, it's way more than his pace was a year ago. He's almost matched it. But he's also been better, I think, overall. He's been very good. But the Chiefs' defense, to me, can make big plays. Can they disrupt that timing and just make a couple big plays from the cornerback position and get some turnovers?
I do wonder about, like, the Dolphins' like offensive line. You've got Chris Jones coming at you. They do have Teron Armstead is practicing on Thursday.
That's good.
But they've got like four or five guys banged up to the point where backups are banged up behind starters. And like Tua gets rid of the ball so quickly, is like zero turnover worthy plays against the blitz. Like he's been pretty pristine when there's pressure. So you got to find another way to get to him.
This will be a big test for the Dolphins. Their wins this year: Chargers, Pats, Broncos, Giants, Panthers, Patriots. Their losses: 48-20 to the Bills, 31-17 to the Eagles. So, two big tests so far this year. They failed them both. And you can't say they didn't fail them because in both games they were outclassed. And now you get the Chiefs.
And they, in those two losses, they went from being one of the best offenses, obviously, in the league, and with any way you look at it, to having a negative EPA to put them at the 27th most effective offense against the Bills and the Eagles. So and here comes Kansas City.
Their run game the last 2 weeks, I think defenses are trying to stop the run almost first, which seems crazy, but the last 2 weeks, 45 yards against the Eagles, 72 against the Patriots. So I think they're going to need to run it better this week.
Like how you feel about the Cowboys, Mark, if they lose 31-17 in Germany on Sunday morning,
yeah,
don't come to me in January and tell me I have to take this team seriously. Because you just flopped three auditions.
Yeah, I think that's fair, though, because you've got a chance to change for if there's people with creeping doubt, like, turn around what we think.
A smidge of doubt. Yeah. Like, you don't even have to win this game. Like, if it goes back and forth and it's a really competitive game, I'm cool with that. But if you no-show and get beat by two scores or something, it's like, okay, go get all your stats.
It's not an outlier.
Kyrie, go get your 2,000 yards. Tua, win all the awards. But, like, am I going to take you seriously when the crucible of the playoffs arrives? I will be, yes, doubting them at that point. So it's an important game in a lot of ways. Okay. Did you have one last thing, Greg?
Well, just a wild booth here. Looking forward to it. Rich Eisen, Jason McCourty, and Dan Orlovsky. So this is a one-off. It's NFL Network. It's Orlovsky, who's at ESPN. We got Stacey Dales, our friend, on the sideline.
Sarah Walsh
House. I'm ready for this. It's we got the time moving this weekend, daylight savings, so we actually get an extra hour of sleep. It's not quite as early here on the West Coast. So that's
four,
nice.
Five. I mean, they got five. Why not make it eight?
Well, no.
Send the ATN guys just to wander around on the sidelines.
Sarah Walsh and Stacey Dales, I believe, are on the sidelines. They're not.
Yeah, why not? Well, yes. Send us there.
We could be on
we'll
the
be in the end
too.
Zones.
Sure.
Not too late. We could get there in time.
All right.
We've done it before for a different network.
Yes.
An overseas outlet.
A bang.
That was the game of the week presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. New customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook and use code ATN. That's code ATN only at DraftKings Sportsbook. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL.
All right, let's move to the other primetime games. Another.
You don't
great
want to say
one.
Sky Sports' name. I mean, they're great people. You can say them.
I think everyone, you know, in that part of the world knows that we're on Sky Sports, wow. So it's redundant.
Bills at Bengals, Sunday Night Football. Now we're talking. And you know who I'm looking for a breakout performance from? Tarico Collinsworth. Still feel like that team hasn't clicked.
I so appreciate
Thank you, Mark.
That you said that. Because I feel, because when we watch those Sunday Night games and they kind of grate on me a little bit, I feel like you can't say it. Everyone's like, no, they're perfect. It's like, I mean, all right, they somewhat annoy me, and I don't.
You know what was perfect?
Well, you've always been anti-Collinsworth since
not,
the start of the show.
It's like the...
Also, maybe football's still on at nighttime. That factors in as
depending
well.
Depending on the matchup, that could be true. But
this,
that's
is
not what
this is a great one. This
one's different.
My point is, Al Michaels, end of prime Al Michaels with Chris, chef's kiss. Mwah. Mm-hmm. Tarico and Collinsworth, I don't sense. I'm just gonna say, Greg, and you know I love Tarico. It hasn't been a home run for me so far. I think by a wide margin, right now, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman are the best team.
I'd agree.
And I didn't think that necessarily a couple of years ago. But I think they have taken the mantle from Nance and Romo, of the Sunday night team. The Thursday night team has never really, I think, got cooking here with Herb Street and late period Al. I think that's the crown.
I know you're talking prime time, but Burkhart, Olsen are right there for me too. They've been,
it's disrespectful for me not to bring them up.
Yeah, they've been.
They're the number one team, and they are very good. But to me, it's Aikman.
A lot of pressure on Tom Brady.
Right. Greg is actually, it's taking the words. He doesn't even know how to react as having critical takes about the announcers.
I'm just letting
like
you
guys, I'm staying out of this.
I'm letting you cook.
Since when have you not had an opinion?
I know. I kind of don't have a hot take on this. I think they're all close. I'd probably take Aikman and Buck, but I still love me some Romo.
Greggy, no hot take.
No.
Greggy, no
they're
media.
All fine.
This happened. They're
good.
This happened a couple weeks
they're
ago.
Good.
When he went.
I remember long enough ago where our main teams were in a bad state that I didn't like one out. I liked like one out of four of them.
Right
now, TNF's the only one that's really on my radar. I'm happy with the others.
Dan's
that's
like anti main. Dan Dierdorf. He was not into. nor was I though.
The ESPN crews were crazy. The Phil Simms and Nance crew was
remember
bad.
Remember the old Sunday
old
night
Aikman
move?
Wasn't as good as he used to be. Like, they're better
Aikman's
than now.
Aikman's gotten
like,
better. A lot
Aikman,
it's all gotten better.
Aikman stopped caring what people thought and got a lot more real in the last couple of years. And that's what led to him, I think, taking the next step. And then as he aged, he increased his resemblance to Jay-Z. And it was just like, okay, so now you have that angle, like the king of hip-hop. You have some of that element as well.
And on to Monday Night Football.
All right, here we go. Sunday Night Football. The Buffalo Bills, 5-3, second in the AFC East behind the Dolphins. So, you know, depending on how things turn out in Germany, they might be playing to jump back into first against the Cincinnati Bengals. And you got to love it. Josh Allen versus Joe Burrow. And interesting here, Mark, and there's a lot of angles to this game, but let's start here. That after all of the concern, rightfully so, around Joe Burrow's health, he's coming off a game where he just balled out as well as any quarterback in any game all season in a beating of the Niners. And now it's the other side. It's Josh Allen, concerns and reports about that shoulder that he injured on Thursday Night Football against Tampa Bay. What will that effect be, if any?
It's just this kind of thing where it's my number one note too. He said that it's so much better. He said that if it was the old trope, if we had to practice today, I could. If we had to play today, I could. But it's like an injury derailed the better version of Josh Allen for parts of last season too.
A shoulder injury,
and it's just like this is like something to monitor, like snap by snap. I think in general, I try like to re-galvanize my thoughts on the Bills because they've gone through these different phases. But I'm looking back at like I think they're just a little snake bit, and some of the timing of what happened to them has been a little wonky. Like, all right, so that they go to London and they're really like sort of adrift and seem sleepy to me in that loss to Jacksonville. They score 14 points in a tight win over the Giants. They get romped by New England. They barely beat the Bucs, and now you're playing the Bengals. It's so about the time of season. If you got them earlier in the year, the Bills are clearly the better team with Joe Burrow walking around somewhat disabled. It's like now the version of the Bengals that we saw last week, this is the best team in the AFC to me. And it's like that, if they can do that.
It's one game, I guess.
It's one game, before. But it's also like, they were heating up into that situation, and I just feel like Burrow almost like got his training camp the last 5 or 6 weeks, and it's like they looked unstoppable to me, and I think they are a team that has shown up against the Bills in the past. They've shown up against the Chiefs. The best version of them can beat anyone in this conference, and what I saw last week was like a siren song. It was concerning.
I just loved that 3rd-and-9 play where Burrow looks at the defense and he changes the play at the line of scrimmage to a QB draw, and he just explodes up the middle for a first down. And he had a couple other scrambles, and Paul Daner does a really good job covering them at The Athletic. And he said Burrow, all offseason, his main focus was adding explosive movement to his game, that he wanted to be a better runner, that he wanted to be more explosive in short areas to be able to buy time and to be able to run. And I saw it. Now that he was healthy, I don't think it was the old Burrow. I think it was a slightly new Burrow, that he might have a little more juice in those legs than he used to, which makes sense. He's getting into his physical prime here. We know mentally he's there, and he's facing a Bills defense like the Bengals defense that on balance has been a little disappointing. If you look at their advanced metrics, these two defenses are middle of the pack, and you would have expected more advantage offenses, I think, in this game. I think we get points, and I think it'll be fun.
Cincinnati's at home here. They are favored by 1.5. And the Bills.
That's it, huh?
Yeah. The Bills have been a better team. You know, most teams are better at home, but their offense statistically has been much better at home, and they've been turning the ball over at a concerning rate in these road games, and it's cost them a couple of games. So they're going to have to be cleaner. We talked about it, Mark, last week when we did the Thursday night recap, that Buffalo, like, that felt like it should have been a 36-17 winner or whatever, and instead they're holding on for dear life on a Hail Mary. So the execution's just got to be a little sharper, and again, just keep an eye on Josh Allen, because they did run him more, which the Bills faithful were clamoring for. But now, if he's got an injury designation, and he's, are they going to take that element away because he's not the same player if he can't use those legs?
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, his use on the ground, we've talked about this before, has been largely non-existent in too many games. I do like that, like, they need someone like Russell Douglas in this game, and like, I don't know what his availability will be, but
I think he's playing.
You got it. He'd already be their best corner right now. They signed Linval Joseph up front, you know, a guy who was about as big as a garage door. And I do like one development from that game, that Dalton Kincaid, last 2 weeks, like, getting a lot more usage. 15 targets, 13 catches, 140 yards. They needed someone to step up, and it, like,
he looked awesome.
He looked great, and I think that's a boon for them. But I'm gonna tell you something right now, like,
yes,
I'm feeling the Bengals. I remember 2 years ago when they started to, like, fascinate me with the way they would destroy the Ravens and Steelers. And you got a lot of that had to do with Joe Mixon on the ground, who looked great last week. And last year, that was not who they were. But I am confidently locking up the Cincinnati Bengals to take out Buffalo, because I think there are structural problems with what the Bills are offering this season.
I'm so annoyed right now, because on our conversation client, where we work behind the scenes to set certain things up, you put in all caps, locking the Bills. And I said, oh, I'm going to lock off with Sessler here because I love Cincinnati. But then you come on the show just now and you say...
I wrote the wrong thing. Yeah. Well, that's why, you know, I try to do two things at once. That doesn't always work out. But no, it's the Bengals.
Yeah,
I'm not taking a road team against this version of the Bengals.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to lock the Bengals too. And it's part of it's an apology. It's an apology to Joe Burrow for locking against him in San Francisco last week. And I just think I'm going to start riding with the Bengals in the locks competition. If they are in the lock zone, I'm just going to get behind Joe Burrow.
This is a sign of someone spinning out in the locks competition. You lose with them against them 1 week, you have to flip with them, and now you're with them every week the next.
Well,
he's spinning out.
You're right, but I will say this, that last week was obviously an eye-opener.
Sure.
Because
you learned
it showed
it.
How healthy he looked.
Yeah.
And you talked about that audible. I called attention last Sunday to that scramble where he got out of the sack early on third down and made the throw as he was going to the sideline. Like, these are the things that one of the greatest quarterbacks in the league and my favorite quarterback to watch in the league makes when he is him, and he is him right now. He is him. I'm me. Who do you think you are? I am. All right. Well, what do we got, Eric?
Well, guys, we also got excited back here because we also saw the lock in the Bills message. So we originally thought
we thought
there would be a lock off between Mark and somebody else. So
all right,
Mark, look
keep
at
you on your toes.
Look at
I wonder who
confusion you caused.
Hello, heroes. Coming off another successful lock week.
The Jets.
Brothers have no faith.
Can't be bragging about that Jets game.
You got
get them out of here. They don't know what they're talking about. They won't do the video. They won't participate. All they want to do is complain. That's fine. I'm going to keep rocking and rolling. Just like the Bengals will keep rocking and rolling this week at home in prime time. Basically, sorry, Eric. You know I love you. But the Bills aren't very good.
Ooh.
They should be. But every week I watch them, and they're just not. They're an average football team. I've been saying all year they're going to miss the playoffs.
Oh.
The Bengals exposed them at the end of the year last year.
Oh.
Won up in Buffalo by a ton. Dominate them. They own this Bills team.
GC.
Joe Burrow throws for 3 touchdowns. The Bengals win big. Lock it up.
All right.
I love it.
And Nick's getting hot, by the way. If we want, can we have the standings, by the way? I know we haven't seen the Rosenthal pick yet. But we have...
Yeah, this isn't right. Dan's 3 back.
What do you mean? How would you know that?
Because they sent it out on
How would you know that?
Through our Twitter.
Do you study this more closely than anything in your entire life?
No, but they sent it out this morning on Twitter, and they added me, and I saw it. The ATN lockups.
What is his record then?
I believe
all I remember was Mark and Dan were three back. That was all I remember.
He's tracking it, isn't he?
Absolutely.
They sent it this morning.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. They send a nice little stand. The Cincinnati Zoo, though, is ahead of you two. They're at 5-3.
I was going to say. Wrong.
Yeah, so they were ahead of me last week.
What's going on with the graphic? So we got Nick, who's hot, by the way. I think they were 1-3 at one point.
Confusing one.
There's a lot of confusion going on right now.
Wait, by the way, I don't like the last comment that you two made about, like, don't give Nick or the crew credit for the Jets lock. I locked the Jets last week, and I thought...
I'm just saying, you don't need to be crowing about that.
I didn't say anything.
No, I
said you locked it up.
Yeah, no, I did it for the show, and it was like, it looked like a tire fire until the final couple of minutes.
You guys had a 1% chance of locking that up, and that goes to show you the power of sports. You always have a chance.
Well, the power of us.
But the amazing level of confusion you caused through the client, that was... Oh, can we bleep out the name of that? Because I don't bring up that company. All right, we got to keep moving. Let's knock this one out and then take a break. Monday Night Football, yes. The aforementioned Jets coming off maybe the ugliest win in history of pro football, but they did win, and they're on a 3-game winning streak. Host the Los Angeles Chargers. I feel like, man, 3.5 Chargers are favored here on the road, which seems weird, too.
Yes, it does.
It didn't start that way. That was an indication that everyone is... putting money on the Chargers. I think it was at 2 to begin with, and it moved quite a bit. That's surprising.
I find this game almost impossible to figure out because the Jets were terrible last week offensively. And in general, you know, as much as I love the team, you know, their winning record, if you look a little closer, this is a team that could be 1-6 right now. I mean, they have really kind of these coin flip games. You could count, I guess, the Chiefs Sunday Night Fair as kind of a coin flip, but not really. They've won every coin flip so far, and maybe that keeps going on. But it doesn't mean they're playing at an elite level right now, even though they're on a winning streak. But the Chargers traveling across the country in prime time against a good to very good defense, that would spook me as well, Greg, if I'm a Charger supporter.
Right. I don't feel confident in this Chargers offense. They're like... really enjoying, I guess it's just their social media team, but it's like they got that primetime like blowout and they're enjoying the hell out of that. It was like, okay, it was against Tyson Bagent and the Bears. Since week 2, this running attack that Kellen Moore wanted to get better has the lowest success rate in the entire NFL by a lot. So everything is on Herbert and there's no Mike Williams. They're not that explosive offensively. And the recipe of everything on Herbert and you have to throw the ball against this Jets team, which is much better against the pass than they are defending the run. They're just great against pass. They're getting to be special, Dan. I was looking for special. They're getting there in terms of their pass rush, in terms of their coverage. And then you have a team in the Chargers who can't run on normal downs and are literally the worst team in the NFL on 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1. So it's everyone gets on Kellen Moore or on Brandon Staley because he goes for it on 4th-and-1. It doesn't work. It's like a lot of it is just... They stink at short yardage. And so that's a team you're going against the Jets. It's a recipe for it to come down to the last 3 minutes. And in that spot, I trust the Jets a little more than the Chargers.
I do too.
They have played well in late in games.
Right.
There's no doubt about that.
They are. I mean, I think this will be a glorious night for the Jets and their fan base.
Is he going to do it?
Well, I just did it. But
is he going to do it again?
I don't trust like a hot and cold mystery team. You know, floating across the country to the East Coast. They've been to me one of the more frustrating teams of my adulthood. That is no more true than under the Brandon Staley world. And I think you can run on them too. I think it's a kind of night where it's like a big Breece Hall night for the super casual fans that aren't tracking like the Breece Halls of the world. Like, this is a superstar running back who needs a couple signature moments, and this could be one of them.
But who's blocking for him? They have major issues.
I think it's also maybe it's like a catch and run type scenario with him.
Okay.
You just get it to him out in the flats. But I, you know, the Chargers, like the one thing that kind of rattled them earlier in the year, they have a good offensive line in many ways, but pressure against Justin Herbert late in games and key situations. I just see that. I feel like the Jets are going to pull something off with Bryce Huff, with Quinnen Williams. They apply more pressure than essentially anyone. It's waves of defenders. And I don't like the idea of Justin Herbert repeating what happened last week again, I don't trust this team to go out and dominate 2 weeks in a row. I expect something strange and unwatchable from them.
Yeah, it would surprise me if Herbert lit up the Jets defense, although it could happen, but I don't think he will. But for all the talk about the Jets offense with Zach Wilson being better than last year, they are 30th in average pass EPA. They are 31st in rush EPA. They are last in the league on third down conversions. They are last in the league in pressure rate allowed. This is a terrible offense.
At least they're dedicated to it.
Which is why I've been saying for weeks and weeks that they should have done something to fix it, whether it was a trade for a wide receiver or on the offensive line or get another quarterback option in. Instead, they're just saying, we're waiting for Aaron and everything's going to be okay. So it is going to be a tough watch, I think, on offense again. I just don't think the Jets are ever going to turn it on offense. So it's going to be these close games, hoping for a big play by the defense, or Zach wakes up and makes a couple throws late like he did against the Giants, and then it's the special teams of the Jets there, which has been excellent. They won a game with Gibson in week one on a punt return. Greg Zuerlein has been automatic so far this year for a team that doesn't get in the end zone. That's huge. And then there is this, because we haven't gone to the old gymnasium in a while. Let's head to the Punter's Punch Bowl Mixer.
Mm.
It's not, you know, it's not as like crazy as the Kicker Club.
Okay? No, it's like salt of the earth.
But here's the headline by the New York Post, Steve Serby, their veteran columnist. Thomas Morstead is the Jets' unlikely weapon. Did you know? He's been unbelievable. He's been nails all year for a team that needs the punter to give them field position and set up the defense well. He became one of two punters in the past six seasons to put three punts inside the five-yard line in one game, which he did against the Giants, and he has been absolutely stellar. He's a special teams player of the week. He's number two in punt yardage, number four in fewest punt return yards allowed. I know it sounds like a bit because we're in the gymnasium right now for the Punch Bowl Mixer, but for this type of team that relies on defense and field possession, the kicker and the punter being excellent has made the difference, and it's a reason why they are in playoff position.
I mean, what a career. This is our time to give Thomas Morstead his flowers. It was Thomas Morstead who came out of halftime and kicked that onside kick for the New Orleans Saints back in the day. Had a great game punting there, too, in the Super Bowl. Big day for Thomas
Morstead. Unbelievable. Flowers.
Sounds like these punters might even be slow dancing at the with the, you know, the music.
Wow, it is nice.
It is.
Yeah. Romantic.
Well, yeah. Babes too, everywhere.
Oh, okay. I thought it was just punters.
Bunch of
it could be
Peggy Sue's.
Yeah, all right.
By the way, I'm not gonna say it's Joe Burrow, but Joey Bosa showed up and looked healthy for the first time all season last week, and I did wonder, is like that a change for this Chargers defense? He looked like Joey Bosa again. That's big.
That game for me is a real toss up, but I'm just gonna go with the Sessler feeling that the Jets have little pixie dust on them.
I think
they find
do.
A way again.
It's like you can accept that. One-fourth of what you're watching from the Jets is going to be terrible, and that's their passing game, and everything else is kind of great.
Last note, my six-year-old son, Harry, well, he's turning seven this weekend, is kind of like a Chargers fan, and he has a Chargers T-shirt, and I sat him down a couple days ago, and I said, all right, Harrison, the Jets and Chargers are playing on Monday night. Who are you rooting for? And I did it in a very serious, solemn way, because he's, you know, kids are fun like that. It really put him in a different headspace, and he was like, I don't know yet, Daddy.
Good answer.
And I said, will you give me an answer by the end of the week? I said, yeah, I got to think about it. So I'll
that
let
is
you know
exactly how he talks to you.
Where Harry comes down.
The good Harrison Hansus impression.
All right, let's take a break, and then we will get to the draft.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
All right, we're back. We are now, finally, to the draft. And Mark Sessler, fully to you, my friend. You have the first overall pick.
Well, and it's a great pick. You know, it's a late game.
Let me just cross it out. Cardinals at Browns.
That's exactly where I'm going with this. No, the Cowboys at the Eagles. It's the we keep having games of the year, but they're building off of what we knew before. So this is now the currently, I think, the game of the year. And an interesting...
I don't think it's the game of the week.
I think it is the game of the year because I think, like, there's, for me, Dallas is, this is kind of like, come show and tell us who you are. And I think they can do it. Like, I would like them better in Dallas in this situation. I think that if you get the best version of Micah Parsons and their pass rush against a great offensive line, there's another little injury thing hanging out there. The Jalen Hurts, who did not look healthy at all coming out of that Dolphins game, limping, ended a press conference earlier this week when they asked him about his knee. He just sort of said, not talking about that. But Jay Glazer's talked about the fact that he's had a bone bruise and he's been dealing with it for 4 weeks. And you're going to get less.
Played great last week.
I know awesome. He played great. I guess what I'm saying is if you can find a way, and this is the thing, can you nullify A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith? If not, this thing is probably not, could potentially not be that close at all. I mean, I could see Philadelphia just doing what Philadelphia does, but can you challenge Hurts to have to get out of the pocket, to have to run a little bit more? I mean, I agree. He looked fantastic a week ago, but this injury's just been hanging around, and it's just the kind of thing I'll monitor. And last week's Dak Prescott and what they did to the Rams, because when they win, they blow teams out and they kind of ended the Rams season potentially with what happened to Matthew Stafford. I mean, they kind of end the Giants season in week one, if you think about it. When all parts of what they do are working, like special teams, they got it last week, defense, offense, it's like they are pretty unstoppable. So it's like, can you come up, can you go through a week of practice in the biggest game of the year when I do have doubts about who they are in big moments and just say, forget it. Last year, Jalen Hurts and Dak Prescott never faced each other. You had Cooper Rush in one game, Gardner Minshew in the other. Now go do it. One-on-one, see what happens.
That's why it surprised me why you think this is the game of the week. But I'll say this. I think the Cowboys are the equivalent of what I was just saying with the Dolphins, because the Cowboys obviously failed a huge test against the Niners, where they just were embarrassed. They got it handed to them, and they kind of licked their wounds and recovered from that. But now here's another big test. And again, it's these teams. If we are to take the Cowboys seriously, it is the Niners and the Eagles that they have to show that they are not going to be bullied by or kind of be brushed aside or be the team that gets kind of laughed at on Monday morning because one of the big boys just pants them in a big spot. You got to go prove something. And I kind of like it, Greggy, that the game's on the road, because if I'm going to take the Cowboys seriously, you got to have a couple of these wins on your resume, and going to Philly and taking out the Eagles would really change the dynamic in the NFC.
I agree. And I will take them seriously, even if they lose like a close game.
Same thing what I said about the Dolphins.
Right. Like, that's fair. Yeah.
If you go back and forth and lose, that's okay, but you can't get blown out.
Right.
But to Mark's point, I don't know if it's the game of the year, but it might have the biggest impact in the Super Bowl race of any regular season game for a while. Because depending how you want to look at the NFC, there's either three real deal Super Bowl contenders, or there's like five, let's say, and four of them are in the same divisions, the West and the East. And the Eagles will get up 2.5 games on the Cowboys with only 8 to play. That's a pretty big margin if the Eagles can win this game. So if you're looking at like there's only three Super Bowl contenders, one of them is going to have to go on the road and win three games, whoever comes in second place in the NFC East. I think you can throw more teams in there in the NFC West too.
And that can be done, and it's been done.
Right, and you can come back from 2.5 games too, but it would be a sizey, to use a Mark word, advantage to get this start. And I was worried about the Eagles because they did not look the same without Jalen Carter on defense last week. I know Fletcher Cox is having his best season in a few years, but Carter is their best defensive player. They've been a mediocre, disappointing defense in general, but Carter is practicing fully, and they've got, you know, an extra secondary help with Jairus Bird. Blankenship's back, so they're actually as healthy as they've been all year. I just wonder, like, N'Kobe Dean's out there. Is N'Kobe Dean a good player? This is a game where I think they'll be targeting the linebacker position of Philly for a while.
I think it's a huge moment for Mike McCarthy, because a win, like, I don't know, it just, this is that game, because I don't feel that way about Dolphins Chiefs in terms of, like, if whatever happens to the Dolphins, like, they're a new good team. You know, it's like they're with a second year head coach and they're like a new experience. Like, this is sort of the Dallas DNA the last couple of seasons, the way that it ended. You like, this is going to be like, if you can find a way to shut down, number one, Philly's like ground game has not been great the last couple of weeks. Like, that's because things are heating up through the air. I guess the question, the inflection point is like, Can you stop A.J. Brown, who looks downright unstoppable to me right now?
Yes. Brown has been, we talked about it earlier in the week, he could be in the MVP conversation. The Eagles, you know, they are obviously, what are they, 6-1 right now? Like, record-wise, they are
7-1
in a very good spot. And, you know, that is the measure of a team that, even if they haven't really clicked on all gears, and the defense, obviously, it was a mess last week against Washington, and the offense has had, you know, stops and goes. The fact that they're 7-1 is a testament to their superpower status, that they find a way. However, let's keep an eye for a team that hasn't really been able to put it all together despite the record. The next 6 weeks, they have the Cowboys, at Chiefs, home Buffalo, home Niners, at Cowboys, at Seahawks. That is a gauntlet like no other team faces all year.
That makes this game even bigger, I think, for the Philly to get that advantage, because if you lose it, suddenly everything looks a little different. Philadelphia is favored by 3, so kind of the desert looks like at these two teams sees them pretty even. Philly hasn't been able to run well lately. That's a little concerning for them, and they are facing Dak on a heater. I know it's only 2 games, but if you just search like PFF from weeks 6 through 8, you know, first in PFF, first in EPA, 5th in completion percentage over expected. Basically, if I'm as a Dak supporter, he's played 2 perfect games. They've been against pretty shaky defenses. This is a great test of if he's going to keep running the ball occasionally against a better defense in a big spot. If he continues a heater, then this team has.
I mean, week 7 was a bye, so weeks 6 through 8 is
right. Those, yeah. I'm saying those
Chargers,
2 games.
Rams,
he basically had 2 perfect games.
I guess like not to be general about Dak, because that stuff annoys me too. But it's like, okay, like this is where we need Dak in, you know, with the entire world watching, to absolutely be the best version.
And I said last week, CeeDee Lamb, go be A.J. Brown, and then he was A.J. Brown
on
Sunday. Now it's A.J. Brown v. CeeDee Lamb. And if the Cowboys have any chance, CeeDee Lamb is going to have to go kind of punch for punch with A.J. Brown in terms of production. Let's see if it happens. All right, Greg, up next.
Okay, you know where I'm going. I'm taking the Seahawks at the Ravens. It's in the early window.
Look at you.
The Ravens are 6-point favorites. How about that? Jim Nance, Tony Romo on this game. And this is the best week of games of the season, because we not only have 4 great games, and I made a little list before the show. I came up with 11 teams, 6 in the AFC, 5 in the NFC, where it wouldn't shock me if they won the Super Bowl. It's like a long list. 8 of those 11 teams are playing against each other this week in 4 kind of big games, and they're all in different windows, including that early London win. So that you can focus on it if you're the general fan. I love this. I am a little worried for the Seahawks offense because this is a team in Baltimore that really forces quarterbacks to make quick decisions. And Geno's really improved at not taking sacks. You can tell it was a point of emphasis. Get rid of the ball a little quicker. Don't take as many sacks. That was probably his biggest weakness as a quarterback coming into this year. He's really improved on that. But sometimes he just then makes a throw that you shouldn't make. And Baltimore is really good at being creative and making quarterbacks make throws they shouldn't make and sending a lot at them. And they've overcome the injuries on their offensive line, and they're maybe getting a little healthier this week for Seattle. But I wouldn't say it's a strength for them against the team in Baltimore that leads the NFL in sacks. The positive is the wide receiver group's kind of coming together. JSN, slowly improving. Jake Bobo, he's a thing. Lockett finally had his best game last week. DK Metcalf, who has been injured, is healthy. So if there is a team that I think could go up and down with Baltimore, like it would be Seattle, but they need their defense to show up.
Watching the game this morning, the Seattle game against Cleveland, and great job going down the field, stealing that game from the Browns, who had the ball with a couple minutes to go before P.J. Walker threw an interception. The Geno thing, you can't hide from it. It is, he threw 2 interceptions. He threw a bad red zone pick. He threw a pick over the middle. It was a really nice athletic play by the defensive lineman. And then he had a late in the third quarter gift-wrapped a potential pick 6 that was dropped. There's a reality, Greg, where
that was a miscommunication with JSN for sure, but that's going to happen.
He enters the fourth quarter with 3 interceptions and they're down 27-17. I think he's living a little bit dangerously.
No doubt.
And he's getting away with some things, and he had some low throws in that game. In general, I don't know what, like, but I'm sure his PFF grade is great, Greg, but like watching these games, it feels like every week now, it's a bit of a tightrope walk. And when is he going to fall off and have a really bad game? And I think it could be this game.
I think that's fair because the difference is like those Browns games, those first two drives, I was expecting, okay, I'm going to see Geno in rhythm. It was actually Geno kind of creating second reaction plays after the pressure got there. So it's similar. It's Geno coasters within games now, where I think there's a lot of high level stuff that's making up for the bad throws.
Like his first touchdown pass was beautiful.
It's a dangerous way to live. No doubt.
The last drive was excellent.
I am worried about this. I am worried about this matchup. I mean, I think anyone would be in Baltimore right now.
Man, they're giving Seattle 6 points. That surprised me a little bit. I think the Geno thing, I'm with you, Dan, entirely. That was a tough game to watch because you're watching a team directed by, you know, Walker, who's making disastrous throws all over the place, massive turnover-worthy issues, and you're hanging around because of your defense, and, like, that dropped pick six was huge. But I think the other side to Geno is that in these games, you see him operating with, like, pretty intense confidence that he can make big plays down the field, too, and there's been some spectacular deep shots, but it is a coaster inside a coaster inside a coaster.
Right, and Lamar's been...
It's a Russian doll of Geno Smith.
Lamar's been more consistent. I don't think his
It's a good gift idea for Greg.
I would.
Geno Smith Russian doll?
I would love it.
Yeah,
I look at this. I look at this Baltimore team, though, and I just see they can win so many different types of ways. They're actually getting healthier. They didn't make any moves at the deadline. There was reporting from The Athletic that they went pretty hard after Derrick Henry, that they would have liked that, but they weren't going to go and give him, like, a first or a high, you know, a set.
Well, that would have been
a conditional
very
first.
Juicy.
So they were interested, but I think they looked at the team they had and they said, look, we're winning all sorts of ways. We have a really effective running game. The passing game's a little up and down, but we can do it. We can win with our run defense. We can run with our pass defense. I just think right now they might be the most complete team in the NFL. They're getting it going, and it hurts me, but I'm trying to take the emotion out of it. I'm going to actually lock against the Seahawks, so I'm winning either way.
You're so weird.
I don't like any other locks. I was like, I really do think they're the best pick for me.
That's amazing.
Wow. I don't hate it.
I know, but it's a look into the mind of Greg that I knew this game was going to give you trouble emotionally.
It does. It does.
And well, you kind of downplayed it last week, but now that this is heightened to the fact that you locked one of the teams.
Well, it is weird
to cover yourself.
Because I still in my heart will be rooting for the Seahawks. That outweighs the locks like slightly, but I do believe the Ravens will win. What I believe, as I'm wearing my Rainmaker sweatshirt, check it out. By the way, I checked out. So people were looking on Instagram like where they could buy this, and I did find the link. I will try to put it up. You know,
good.
You
better get a taste of it.
Whenever Idris Elba can make a sweatshirt with the NFL, it's promoting his charity, and it randomly says Rainmaker on it, and nobody knows why, you got to get it.
Right.
You might have had some influence in that. We don't know.
I don't think so. Nobody knows.
Hasn't really been brought up by Greg, but I personally engineered him getting the sweatshirt.
You did a great job. You were at the store. Yeah. You said, look at this. Thank you very much.
That's
how you. That's Henry, we gotta
get
this
right
for Greg. And I went on the rack and I sought out the proper size for you.
Appreciate you.
And
you said that. I said, I will venue you right now. Get me the smallest size they have. And then you got it for free. So look at you.
Now, Henry obviously played a major role, but if I don't elevate that as something that needs to happen, you're not wearing that.
I want to give you all the flowers.
But
thank you.
Let's take it to what I'm really
trying
to get to.
25 times.
Flowers.
I'm not looking for flowers. I'm looking for a taste of the action. If you ended up moving units of this and you get a taste,
well, I don't think that's
back
happening. Yeah.
2% to Zeuser. All
in
right.
fact, my size is sold out, I noticed, but there are still large and extra larges available.
All right, let's get to... see, this stinks because so many great games.
There's a drop off.
There's nothing left.
There's an intense drop off.
We're like an hour into the show, so
there's
we might
nothing
need to
left.
Pick up the pace.
There's literally nothing left that excites me. In fact, Greg, can you pick my game for me?
I like that.
Okay. Well, now I'm going
to
make self-interested.
Yeah, do whatever you want because there's nothing here
Okay, I'm going to give you Commanders Patriots.
Commander's page. Okay, that's fine because I'm not going to focus as hard as the other.
I don't know. You told me to give you one. I was like, what game do I not want to watch? So that's how
all right, you're out. Mark, can you pick me a game and not be self-interested?
Okay.
Be happy to.
Yes.
Let's see here.
What would you pick if you were in the spot? Bad job, Greg. La Reveille Magnifico.
Okay, you know what I would pick?
No, you're out. Mark is The draft has been pushed to Mark on behalf
really
of me.
It is really intensely bleak. There's injuries all over the place.
I'm a weirdo. I'm telling you what I would pick. I would pick Vikings, Falcons, and get in on Jaren Hall, Heineke, and just see what the heck's going on over there.
No.
That's what I would
do. How about a little C.J. Stroud versus Baker Mayfield, Tampa at Houston?
All right. Well, I'm going to take them both. How about that? Those are my next two picks.
Okay.
Let's start with the Vikings at Falcons. Yeah, it's post-Kirk now. It's Jaren Hall.
Maybe. We never know if Josh Dobbs.
Josh Dobbs is in the building. They did get him. So there's, a possibility he plays. Once upon a time last year, Baker played on a couple days' notice for the Rams. Do you need to get Josh Dobbs in a game at all costs? No, I'd rather take a look at the kid and then see, make an evaluation after four quarters. But the Vikings also are quietly, amidst all the trauma that the season has accrued now due to injury on a three-game winning streak, they got back to 500. They are in the thick of things. I think they hold the seventh playoff spot in the NFC as action kicks off. And there is intrigue with the Falcons now. I mean, I will give the slightest amount of credit to Arthur Smith, who's terrible. He finally made a decision in the team's best interest rather than what would show that he's smarter than everyone else. And he benches Desmond Ridder. He's a backup quarterback, as he always was. Who knows what would have happened with this super soft schedule they have if he would have pulled the trigger a month ago and gotten in what I think is a very good backup quarterback in Taylor Heineke. Maybe they are in the mix for the first or second seed in the NFC. It's not crazy when you think about their schedule and what lies ahead. But now they have a quarterback who can potentially get hot. And again, this is the general idea of the Falcons heading into the season is, they could be fun this year because they have Drake London, because they have Kyle Pitts, because they have Bijan Robinson. They have pieces here, ostensibly a good offensive mind at head coach that can pull some levers here. Okay, none of that worked. But now you have a guy in Heineke who could sling it a little bit, and let's see if he's allowed to throw the ball and they can get a good mix of pass and run. If the Falcons' offense does actually show real signs of life, they certainly did in the half Heineke played on Sunday.
It had to happen. It had to happen. And I think like what you're pointing to with Arthur Smith is something we all see, that it's just like the messaging around it was confusing. I don't care at this point. He's in. We need to see the change. That said, the thing that I think is a little interesting is that like Ritter's numbers and Heineke's numbers in general are like almost identical.
But that's why I can't trust numbers like that.
I agree with that.
I mean, Heineke's Washington numbers.
Yeah, but I would say Heineke in general is no stranger to like perilous decisions.
Of course.
But I find him to be an adventure, and I like Taylor Heineke. It's like, no matter what, the Desmond Ridder train was like careening into a wall. You had to do this. And if it works, suddenly an offense that has a lot of pieces, if they can play in sync better and you can get this vision of whatever this Arthur Smith offense actually wants to be this year, you're in better.
Well, here's
I don't think the vision's going to happen because their running game stinks, and that doesn't have to do with Desmond Ridder.
Yeah, but then
let me ask you a question.
You have to be flexible and change what you do.
Right, but I just mean that was the vision, and that's the biggest
problem.
That's a big problem.
It's not worked.
But I think the failures of the quarterback could play a role in the running game's failures as well. Here's the question I have. Because Desmond Ridder was put in a caretaker role and failed, okay? Do you think that, Greg, Taylor Heineke will be put in the same type of role, or they're going to take this as a chance to try to open up the offense a little bit, and maybe that changes things in the running game as well? Because I think they should. I think they should just go for it.
I think they were going for it with Ridder. They were very heavy pass run. Like, he was throwing a ton. He was throwing a ton down the field. It just wasn't good. Like, they went pretty heavy pass because I think everyone was just building to stop the run, which makes sense. And I think they'll probably do that with Heineke, too. I think this is a tough matchup. The Falcons are a 4.5-point favorite, and I know we don't know anything about Jaren Hall. He's a fifth-round rookie. He's got a little bit of mobility. He's 25. He's a little different than what you would expect. You know, he's at Utah. Where was it? Or BYU. Forever. And he's, like, not a huge arm or anything like that. But Kevin O'Connell with the backup quarterback, like, and it's a tough matchup. It might just go sideways. But I hate giving the Falcons 4.5 right now because I look at the Vikings defense, and I think right now that's the best group in this game. The Vikings defense is pretty good. It's like a top 10 DVOA defense, and you got a defense that is different than any other Do you have a coaching staff in Atlanta and a quarterback in Atlanta that's going to be ready to deal with all this? Because the 49ers really weren't. The Packers certainly weren't. I could absolutely see Tyler Heinicke like turning it over four times and the Vikings feeling pretty great and winning this game, like if Jaren Hall gives them anything. So I don't like 4.5 at all. I think I'm going to pick the Vikings to win this game on game debut. And not that that matters here, but I just feel better. I think they're good. I think they're good, the Vikings. So well, I don't know. We'll see about Jaren Hall.
Their defense is getting better.
I don't know. A lot of it was Kirk Cousins. You're right. He really was playing like a top three quarterback, but I just think they've got something going here.
One thing, Dan, because it's not that it looked good, but they had Ritter throw the ball in five of these games, 31 times, 32, 37, 38, and 47. Right. So it's like, that's kind of what you'd want Taylor Heinicke to do, and like you're just hoping it's a better version.
I don't like that against Minnesota.
I think they need to get it going on
the ground. And maybe you're right. Maybe they can't. Even just having a better quarterback to extend drives helps the running game because you just get more attempts at it.
And asking, you know, after your quarterback's inability to protect the ball, being like, oh, we got to fix this by turning to Taylor Heinicke. That's not necessarily going to end well. But in general,
they had to do it. Yeah.
I just feel like Heinicke is going to be a more professional option.
It just feels very Falcon-y to then lose this game after all that. That's all I'm saying. Falcons fans know what I'm talking about.
All right. My second game will be, sorry, Mark.
Tampa Bay at Houston.
I kind of, the Texans, I know I'm supposed to like watching the Texans. It's not there for me yet.
Can I say I looked at every game and I found a problem with every game?
Yeah,
you pick your problem.
I'll go with a gallery of the grotesque here. Let's go with the Giants at the Raiders because I want to pair. I'm definitely watching Cowboys Eagles. So let's pair it with a Sauvin Blanc. Well, you know, I'm going to give it, and then I'm going to have like a Ecto Cooler. And it's going to be Giants coming off. I mean, again, as I was saying in the text thread with my New York friends, who are virtually all Giants fans, I'm calling it the 99% game when the Giants had the 99% chance to win on Sunday.
You must be a delight on that
text thread. Wonderful. But trust me, being the Jet fan in a world of Giants fans has been a difficult run for about 40 years. So the Giants fans can deal with that. You lose the 99% game. And now you get the Raiders. And it's interesting that the Raiders are favored by 1.5 with all of their misery right now, all of their dysfunction. The fact that Aiden O'Connell is the new quarterback, and you could say, well, that could be better. And I believe I wish I could cite who the report was. There was a report out there that the announcement was made, oh, Jimmy G has been benched, Aiden O'Connell is going in, and someone within the team was like, well, that makes sense. He's the best quarterback on the team. There was a general vibe, and I think there were some whispers from our insiders that, in general, the idea of Garoppolo as QB1 always wasn't clicking behind the scenes, that he just wasn't playing well, whether it was in training camp, in practices, and certainly...
Probably a bad sign when you have to have surgery on your foot before you've ever taken a snap, and you had to like move things around because you couldn't pass a physical.
Right.
And then you hurt your back. Like,
I think that's a good sign.
In retrospect, it was a total doom scenario, and the fact that it was like, oh, Josh McDaniels needs to be reunited with Jimmy G, all that stuff is gone. So it makes sense. Jimmy G, by the way, is going to get the same exact situation now. You will not see him again. Because the reason they made Carr disappear last 2 weeks is they didn't want to trigger the guaranteed money, the injury designation there. And Jimmy G is the most fragile quarterback in the league. So he's gone, and they're going to get rid of him at the end of the year. So it's Aiden O'Connell against the Giants. I didn't fork the Giants a couple weeks ago. After that Jets loss, that's tough beat. But now you got the number 7 seed, for instance, is the Vikings, who are a team that's obviously on life support. I like the Giants in this game.
I think it's the fired coach principle is why the Raiders are.
I don't
even know.
What is that for people who are not aware?
The spice rack is the number one proponent of this. Just that the record of interim head coaches in their first game is extraordinary.
I'd be curious to see what the data point is on that, but it feels
so
that way.
All the Raiders are suddenly going to play harder this week. I actually believe that's possible. You know, with McDaniels out of the building, Daniel Jones probably returning for this game. I think it's a big 9 games for him. I think it's a big 9 games for Evan Neal, who might be coming back. They might get Andrew Thomas back. I mean, this is about evaluation for the Giants. Evan Neal is kind of skirted without much attention as, you know, one of the most disappointing top 10 picks in the last few years. He's really struggled. And So you got to protect Danny Dimes if he does come back.
I don't know. I mean, it's I'm not.
He is expected to come back, to be clear.
Like, you've got Max Crosby in this game. The last time we saw Daniel Jones, he was getting absolutely blistered and was happening week after week. And it's like, you're not going to fix this Giants offensive line. They all, if you take away that 31 points they scored against the Cardinals, they already are last in scoring. They average 9.1 points per game. And I know it's like, it's a soup of issues, but like everything, the shine that was on Brian Daboll a year ago, is completely off. It's like, I don't see a well-coached team, and I couldn't have been higher on them a year ago, and I know they've had injuries, but I mean, every team is banged up all over the place.
They were an impossible, and it was from a team-building situation, it was on them, but the fact that their third-string quarterback, they couldn't even trust them to pass the
ball. I'd point to the rest of the season, too, though.
But what I guess what I'm saying is, like, if you have that Tommy DeVito disaster set up, I will give the offensive line credit that the Jets, who are a very good defense, knew he couldn't run the ball. They couldn't throw the ball. And he still, and this is a credit to Saquon, too, they still went over like 125 yards rushing. So that there's some credit to be had there. I think it's also interesting that they were being so careful with Daniel Jones. And then after the DeVito nightmare, all of a sudden it's like, yep, now you're in. You're back in. We'll see if he's healthy. But it's a game. It's a curiosity, put it that way. And one last thing here. No revenge game for Darren Waller. He is out, it sounds like, multiple weeks with that hamstring injury. All right. Greg, you're up.
I'm going to take Rams at Packers. This is where we're at. 3.5-point favorites for the Packers. If I have a great early game, I want one that doesn't need its full attention. And that's the Rams at the Packers, unfortunately. Right now, Packers, one of the worst teams in the NFL. And there's some optimism since we last talked about Matthew Stafford in the sense that I think whatever the worst case scenario, him going on injured reserve, that's not happening. He didn't practice Wednesday. They're not ruling him out. They tried to sign John Wolford in between. And so they got John Wolford paid because then the Bucks were like, we're not letting you take
this
John
was
Wolford.
Crazy.
So they elevated him to the active roster.
Well, didn't Wolford say he didn't want to go to the Rams?
I didn't know that part, but
that
you are.
I mean, I guess you know you
context.
Moved, like you probably got kids in school. It's like I don't want to go back to the Rams. That
really?
To me. I
don't think
I will look
I don't,
at it right now. But that's
I don't think you have a choice, anyways. I know you don't have a choice. If the Bucks wanted to keep him, they can keep him. So they did, anyways. It just shows where the Rams are at in terms of their backup. That it's going to be Brett Rypien most likely. Although it sounds like Stafford, you know, could push and try to play if they did. I think if he did, you know, I would like them in this game. Not if because I would like anyone against
question.
The Packers. The Packers are maybe the worst team in the NFL. I mean,
yeah.
They're possibly.
They're in the mix. Their defense is terrible, too. Mark, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
Because we know each other very well and the various things that make us tick as football fans and observers.
You could say a lot here.
You were exhausted by the Packers in the Aaron Rodgers era. And then you said repeatedly that you felt revitalized in terms of watching the Packers now that there's new blood there and Jordan Love. Do you still enjoy watching these Packers? Does it give you any juice or are you now soured on them?
Not in the least. I mean, yeah. I think any human would have a similar response. Packers fans especially are not enjoying the experience. I think it's like pretty telling that Goody talked pretty openly about the fact that like the rest of this season was kind of a, you know, we support Jordan Love, but a bit of a referendum on where they go. It's like, this may not be a multiple year situation with Jordan Love.
I think they're weirdly, even though Love is their guy and they gave him a 2-year contract, but they can get out of it. Weirdly, Jordan Love's taking a lot of the heat that Goody and LaFleur should be taking. Cause like you put it all on Jordan Love. They put so many resources into that defense. They're 28th in DVOA. They are dead last in plays per drive allowed. They just can't get off the field. Okay, so you're going to play very safe on defense and let them go. Well, the second part of that is that we'll make some turnovers because we're keeping our eyes on the quarterback. They're terrible at making any big plays. And that's all LaFleur and that's all Goody. They brought back Joe Barry. That's where they put their draft picks. They did all of this. Those are their decisions. They're just as disappointing, if not more, on defense, I would say, than offense. So it's on the coach and it's on the GM more than it is on Jordan Love, who's not playing well either, obviously.
Here, Love ranks last in completion rate among the 32 qualified quarterbacks. He's even behind Zach Wilson. The Packers rank 25th in total yards per game. They're 21st in passing yards per game. And I didn't really love some of the reporting, or I should say the headline writing around Gutekunst. Where's the Brian Gutekunst theme song, by the way? I haven't heard that one in a while.
It's been a while. That's more of a like a spicy, festive. It is Germany.
Yeah, but you know what? It gives it a little pathos when there's bad things happening as well.
Absolutely.
There's that edge to this.
Yeah, there's
voice.
A little bit of anger and angst to this anthem.
It was kind of reported that the Packers are not sure if Jordan loves the answer, and we kind of know that. But I think what he did say, like, these next 10 games or whatever are very important. Like, so there it is. I don't think it's as salacious as maybe it could be presented, but it makes sense. Like, he needs to show more than he's shown, certainly in the last 5 weeks or so. It started out pretty well.
And it's really gone off a cliff.
Yeah.
If the Rams want to be one of those teams that could get in the seventh mix, which they could with, I think, a healthy Stafford, you got to win this game. Find a way. Even with Brett Rippon, I wouldn't rule it out.
Packers getting 3.5. Your boy Adam Amin is on that one, by the way.
Greg's boy.
Yeah. Is he the... And he's buried, guys.
That's Spiro Dietis.
Excuse me. Sorry.
But we like Adam Amin.
Sure.
Chicago guy.
All right.
I think he does the Bulls.
Mark,
I'm all over the league pass.
Good job, bud. Mark, you're up.
Well, it would be disingenuous if I had picked a game that I thought would be entertaining for you to skip it myself. So I'm going to go Tampa Bay at Houston.
And this is Texans by 2.5.
And for the reason I mentioned, the C.J. Stroud factor here. I think he struggled last week. Carolina made things difficult for him. He still does things. What?
I'm just saying, don't let Cardinals-Browns get back to me on the draft because I will take
it. Yeah, it is interesting.
There's disastrous stuff happening there, but this is a snake draft for me, so I could pick it next.
Oh, good point. But he's sent a warning to you.
I mean,
can I make a trade offer? Can I make a trade offer to move up in front of you?
Yeah, I'd let you do that.
No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
All right. Anyways, well, I like love the idea of let's see C.J. Stroud bounce back against a good Bucs defense that probably will just completely shut down the run. They've been doing that all year. Todd Bowles has them blitzing at the third highest rate. So, you know, last week that caused some problems for Stroud. I thought that, like, if beyond the Bryce Young development where he played, you know, I thought better than he had at any time this season, it's like week after week with Will Anderson. They've got guys like Jonathan Greenard blowing up plays last week. Blake Cashman did a lot. It's like this is a bit of a strange defense, but I think D'Amico Ryans and Bobby Slowick as well, like this coaching staff has made a lot of difference here. And I give them a chance every week, and I still eye them as a potential Team of ATN because of that.
Well, I don't think Team of ATN is happening, although unless something pops up.
Team of ATN?
I guess just like in
November.
All right. Well, we won't be doing that. But in my mind, like they're the team I kind of like watching as a second game each week. So
good.
I'm into the Houston Texans this season.
I'm glad that it lasted too.
Both 3-4. To me, this is a do you want to be part of the Season Bowl? And I hope the Texans win because they would be a more interesting team, I think, to be part of the season. When we were in high school, I now feel bad about this, but thinking about it, there was a group of individuals that were called like the Just Their Gymnasts. And it was in Dan's parlance. They weren't really putting anything on the table, but they weren't taking anything off. They were just the Just Their Gymnasts.
They're just there.
The yeah. Bucks are the most Just Their
Gymnasts. Wait, who is
gymnasts.
Wait, who are
what
the
does
gymnasts,
this mean?
Though? What, they were gymnasts?
You mean socially?
Gymnastics?
I guess they were just sort of...
They were known
they were
as
there.
Being...
I don't know if they were known. I don't think it was something that was voiced, you know, widely. But
I don't know if I...
They were just sort of like... They were just kind of like there. You were like, oh, yeah, the gymnasts. Like, they're the crew.
I don't know if I've ever actually shared this on the show before, and I think it would be helpful to the audience because I think it offers clarity in terms of
you lived above a coal mine,
a social circle. No, this has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
There are three types of people in the world, and I want to give credit, speaking of the coal mine, Brian Patterson, wherever you are, bud. This was Brian Patterson's theory back in Pearl River. There are people that they sit at the table, you're at the table, you sit at the table, and they're bringing things to the table. Oh, here comes a turkey. Who likes burritos? Mm. Who needs a drink? I'll get you some. Then there are people like the gymnasts of West Massachusetts that are just sitting at the table. And they're not taking anything off the table.
No.
But they're not really adding anything. But they're there. And you don't really have an issue unless there are people that bring things to the table that could be sitting there. But then people just that aren't bringing
anything. They've been crowded out, yeah.
But then there's the people that you got to get out of your life. The people that take things from the table.
Energy people.
Where's the salt shaker? It's missing. Oh, where's the ketchup? Oh, I'm missing the cutlery. Like, what? Some people are just taking things off the table.
Yeah.
And you, those are the people you got to take out of your life. So if you're lucky, you have a lot of people that bring things to the table and you got a feast. But if you got things missing on the table all of a sudden, reevaluate who's sitting at your table.
Yeah, it's a percentage game. If you remove all the takers, then all you're dealing with are the givers and that middle of the road group. I still don't understand the
Bucks,
gymnast
the
part
Bucks
of this.
Are the Bucks are the job, just their gymnast, but I like this. I think I heard
the gymnasts were bullied by Greg.
No, no one ever
gang.
Said a word.
Gymnastics team, or yeah. Just like yeah. You were putting the entire gymnastics team into this bland category.
Yes,
come okay. For Greg, gymnast.
Wasn't me.
I don't. It is just like a little. Only nickname. More confusing, but it led to a.
I enjoyed that. I'm with you. I think I heard Spencer Hall, who's great on Bomani Jones' podcast this week, say if someone walks into the room and sighs heavily. That's the person you got to work wary about. You know,
oh, yeah.
And that's who's taking, you know, they sigh heavily. They immediately are trying to take control of the emotions of the entire, you know, room. I'm like,
I think of this. A couple shadowy league figures from our past that would like walk in a room 40 minutes late to a meeting and flip the lights on. Like, oh, now you're here. Here comes the attention.
I'm immediately going to try to get rid of my bad energy onto you.
I actually like that person that you're referring to, but action, yeah.
I like him, but that was more
let's move on.
A corporate lever pull, and I could think of a
Where's
lot.
Where's Tommy Lee Jones where you need him?
Nowhere. Let's move on.
I don't care!
There. All right. Mark, it's back to you.
All right. I'll take the Cardinals at Cleveland. Cardinals are getting 8 points in this, not surprisingly. I mean, it's like, here's the thing. There is a world where it's Clayton Tune versus P.J. Walker.
Yeah, it's still a big game for the Browns.
A potential world where it could possibly, and it seems unlikely, but it could possibly be Kyler Murray versus Deshaun Watson.
It's according to reports, it's most likely Clayton Tune versus Deshaun Watson because Watson has practice. He says he feels good. He doesn't want to commit, but it sounds like there's progress and it sounds positive.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, like Clayton Tune put into a tough spot here. They're missing parts on their offense to begin with. They weren't a great offense to start. And you're going to go against, in Cleveland, there's going to be some weather here, against the Myles Garrett-led defense that nearly beat the Saints a week ago with some incredible plays and like how are simply trying to survive the P.J. Walker experience. He has 9 turnover-worthy plays.
9.
Every game. And it's like, I think it's like, we watch P.J. Walker, like, you can tell this guy cares. He's plugged in. But all that's like,
not good enough.
That's all fine though, right? But
the offense has been okay. Like the screen game, the running game,
the run game has been good. I know,
not
but
good
like,
enough.
Cooper's
but,
had
but
big
that's
plays.
What, I'm just not. I'm not. I think a week ago I would have been saying that, and that's all true. And Njoku's been good as well. But like you can't look past what P.J. Walker has cost them. I think they have 2 more wins with some of the gaffes taken away.
And that's not like I know exactly.
Wait, what
it's
are
not
you
a
talking
takedown.
About? Which games? Just
some
Seattle.
Well, how about
they won his other games?
Yeah, but I'm seeing P.J. Walker's like
are we in the, are we in
general.
The Greg P.J. Walker
no.
And his ilk vortex?
My
right
point
now?
Is they had 385 yards last week. They gave up 362. I didn't look at that and say like the defense is totally carrying. Of course, the defense is better, but the offense did more positive things in Seattle than I would have expected.
I think
they're not a defunct offense, but it's like P.J. Walker. They're living on the edge with P.J. Walker.
But he hasn't cost them wins, is my point, because he's played
he did
in
last
two
week.
Wins. Yeah,
yes, he
maybe
did last
one.
Week.
And this is a team that's going to need all the wins they can get when they're trying to squeeze in to the playoff picture. And the longer he plays, the more games he's going to eventually cost them.
We're now 6 weeks from Watson's injury. And so that was supposed to be
so
a
that's
match.
And
the,
I'm factoring like the
so that's
rookie
the,
in there too.
That's
like,
the impossible situation with the Browns right now, because you know, Walker is a guy that's not going to win games and you know what?
Oh, no. I agree.
But now you're waiting on Watson to come back, and Watson wasn't that good before he got hurt. And now we don't know what his health is. So they're kind of caught in purgatory, and oh, by the way, Bradley Chubb is rehabbing a horrific knee injury. So the fact that their defense is being asked to do so much week to week when they let down as it did for parts of the Seattle game, that makes it very difficult. And that we'll see what they can do going forward. But
against Clayton too,
they're kind of caught.
But the Browns are the PFF's 32nd ranked passing attack, and a year ago with Jacoby Brissett, who is a higher quality backup, obviously, like.
You saw Stefanski coach him up. I think Stefanski's out of turns with this passing game. Like, there's just not much he can do.
Watson,
they made little plays here and there.
Watson took half those snaps. So I think they have a lot of potential because they're 4-3. They've got Clayton Tune most likely this week. They should be able to get to 5-3. I would expect.
Good spot.
I think Watson maybe saw, we got Arizona on the schedule. Let's get back on the field here.
But that shouldn't dictate anything.
No, I know. I'm joking there. I just think they are in a good spot to get to 5-3 despite having one good Deshaun Watson game and no Nick Chubb.
Yeah.
To me, that's actually room for, okay, we could do something here.
And yeah, that's what makes it so frustrating when happening against the Seahawks. Well, they had that game.
It
you know?
Stands out, but that's fine. Yeah. Like, those things happen. But I think you're right, Greg. Like, they're all around the roster, there are positives. It's just like you're trying to survive.
Even the run game's gotten a little better the last few weeks. So
what is their they traded Peoples Jones at the deadline.
Yeah.
And you know I like that David Njoku, Mark.
Nice game.
Told you that many times.
Nice game.
And he played really well on Sunday. Elijah Moore hasn't popped for them. Like, who is their Amari Cooper? What's going on with their wide receiver group right now? Because even when Deshaun Watson comes back, what's going on with this passing game?
I think Amari Cooper has made plays in every single game. And
who's their number two guy right now? Like, who's that guy?
I think it's Njoku. I mean, from a tight end position, right. Elijah Moore. They probably wanted someone like David Bell for 2 years in a row to step up and do more. I thought the trade was just a little mysterious, but
that's what I mean.
But Donovan Peoples-Jones had 8 catches, so they don't really have a clear cut third guy.
Okay, let's take a break and then we'll finish a draft.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
All right, we're back. Home stretch, Greggy, your last pick.
Oh, I need a late game. So I guess I'm taking Colts-Panthers. Funny how the draft works.
Not bad.
The Frank Reich.
Not good.
Revenge game? No.
Sure.
I don't know.
I think that could absolutely qualify this.
How about the Bryce Young breakout game?
Okay. I would like that. The Colts defense does tend to help opposing quarterbacks. I've been saying it on the pod for a while that I just think he's getting steadily better. He took too many sacks last week against the Texans. Bryce Young, that is. But made a number of good throws, too. He just looks like, I know he's so small that he doesn't look like a lot of NFL quarterbacks, but we've seen a lot of quarterbacks come into the league and they just don't belong, and to me, he belongs. And I think it's clear, like, compared to a Zach Wilson or even a Mac Jones. Like, I just see it, and I think he's going to be okay. Now, is he going to be a huge difference maker? We'll have to find out over the next few years. They did make some big changes in Carolina, I thought, coming out of the bye. They straight out bench Miles Sanders. So it's a Chuba Hubbard and Blackshear running backfield with Sanders in the third spot. And then they bench Hayden Hurst and Tommy Tremble played some. At least they're trying some different things. They're playing some younger players. And I think they went with kind of Thomas Brown, the new play caller, his guys. And they have a little bit of vibes after the first week.
I thought Young made some passes last week that turned me into a believer a little bit. Where I was before, I just wasn't sure. But I will say this, like, he got hit a lot, but he
took a beating.
He did, but you know what? He showed some real, I thought he was just showed some toughness. Like, he just kept getting back up. And maybe if you're like, everyone's always talking about how small he is, he's kind of just like.
He took a ton of hits in college in the SEC.
Right.
Like, people kind of showed themselves when, and I'm not a big college guy, but when I eventually went back to do the study, it's like, well, you know, he was in front of the Alabama offensive line. No, they stunk last year. Like, he got brutalized up front. And so he's got hit a lot. We'll see. The Colts running game, though, is still the best thing in this game, and one of the reasons I kind of like it as a late game is, like, give me some Jonathan Taylor versus one of the worst run defenses in the league.
He got one carry, I think, with like 13 minutes to play. He got his final carry, and then they just didn't use him in their loss to the Saints for the rest of the game as a ball carrier. So I think Zach Moss has been, you know, a pleasant surprise for them, but I think it's time to stop being so cute about
how much
the
were they
thing.
Using Zach Moss then down the stretch.
Colts, they didn't have the ball a ton, but like, they used Zach Moss quite a bit. It was partly like it kept coming up in short yardage, and he is pretty great in short yardage. The Colts are favored by 2.5 in this game, by the way.
Jonathan Taylor.
Right. They've been answering these questions all week. So they're going to give him the ball.
Don't be Artie Smith about it. Just do what makes sense. Common sense. By the way, the last three games and before Anthony Richardson got hurt, I really loved the Colts as a team of ATL nominee. Gardner Minshew's fun, but the defense has got to be better. I mean, if the Bryce Young breakout game, these last 3 weeks at Jacksonville, they gave up 37. Against the Browns, 38. Against the Saints, 38. So it's there for Bryce to have.
In fairness, Minshew's been a huge part of that.
Yeah, he's been like a turnover worthy
player.
That's fair.
Giving them a ton of extra possessions.
That's fair. That's fair. I just feel like at home, this would be a nice Bryce Young story.
Yeah, win a couple games.
Count for three touchdowns and get people excited down there.
Well, and the fact they don't have their own pick, it's Chicago's pick, I really feel like it's just going to make it feel weightier that they traded all this for Bryce Young.
By the way, at Chicago next week, pinch me. All right, I close it out. I have like 400 games in the early window. Let's go with, just out of spite, I'm going to put the Patriots last, Greg. Bears at Saints. Bears at Saints.
That's an exciting selection, Dan.
Saints by 8.5.
Saints, 8.5 points. And you know what? I think that's fair because I like the way this offense looked. We talked about it, the best version of their offense all season by far. And I like the idea of keeping Taysom Hill involved. Alvin Kamara has really kind of shown signs of life. He's been a touch monster for them. He's really the focal point of the offense. Greg, one thing I want to get eyes on here, your boy, the offensive player of the year prediction, Chris Olave.
Where's he been?
Where's he been in this offense?
Not on the same page of Derek Carr, making big drops in his own head, getting arrested, being kind of the main character and in the spotlight in a way that he's probably never been in his whole career.
That's
and
a tough
not
resume.
Necessarily handling it well. I think the arrest was for reckless driving over the speed limit.
He is, since week four, and he started out great. We were talking about that. He was averaging over 7 catches and 100 yards a game the first 3 weeks. The last 3 weeks, 4.5 catches a game, 43 yards. He's not getting in the end zone. And neither is Michael Thomas, by the way. There's a disconnect in terms of the red zone with those wide receivers, which is why it's so important, Greg, that Alvin Kamara, who found the end zone twice, once as a rusher, once as a receiver last week, gets that mojo back, and Taysom Hill stays in the mix because he's another guy that has a nose for the end zone. That helps him so much.
Yeah, when I made that list of who could realistically win the Super Bowl, I did not include any teams from the NFC South. I feel good about that. But this is a big game, I think, for the Saints to build on the most positive offensive performance in years for them and just take care of business and beat the Bears and keep it going because they have dudes. Shahid's a dude. Kamara, I think, is looking better. He's not the old Kamara, but he's still a plus starter. And even Michael Thomas is, you know, playing well despite what Kamara. Did you guys hear about this called I can't, you know, this goes on fast. I can't say it, but the S word bug, he said. Everyone last week was taking IVs because the diarrhea was just running through the whole team. They said it.
Let's use the D word,
Kamara,
too, because it's such a bad
Kamara
word.
Kamara said it. I think it's going to bring them together as a team that they overcame this and had a great
performance. You could also just say stomach bug, and people are like, okay, we got it.
I know, but that's what Kamara said.
This happened before last week's game.
This was before and during. At halftime, they were taking IVs. They had no fluid. It was
happen
like,
every week then.
Yes, yeah, right. It led to a great performance.
It's sneaky, like one of the worst parts of being a human, and I'm glad they're past it.
Pass rush needs to be a little better, but it should be again.
Are we getting Bajan again?
We are getting Bajan.
We're getting Bajan again. All right.
About Montez Sweat? Is he gonna play much in this? I kind of like the idea of throwing him in there against.
I mean,
the Saints' offensive line, which is a little sketchy.
It's not like you're playing quarterback. You got to figure out, certain rushes, certain.
You know what I like?
Loops and whatnot, but he can go out there.
You know what I like? If you got the Saints defense and fantasy, fire them up because you might get a 25-point effort from them. I think this is going to be ugly. Saints roll. All right. Finally, Commanders at Patriots. Patriots are favored by 3 points in this ball game. The Commanders, a couple things going on with the Commanders. Obviously, they just traded away their two top edge rushers. So that's interesting. They are looking ahead to a future that might not include even their head coach. So they're in a tricky spot. Also, Sam Howell pretty much balled out against the Eagles and kept them in that game and made that just a really interesting, fun game. So he has been, you know, I feel like on balance, there's been some lows. I think there was a 5-interception game against the Bills. But I think he's been a little bit, he's been better than I expected. So I think, I'm not saying he's the future. I think just like what you're hearing out of Green Bay, I think the next 10 games are incredibly, or 9 games are incredibly important for Sam Howell to give himself a chance to be a part of the future here. And the Patriots, Mark, we mentioned it, Kendrick Bourne, who's really their only playmaker of note, at least in the passing game. He's out for the year with an ACL. So they're in virtual must-win territory here because you get the Commanders. Let's talk about it, Greg. The Patriots as a team that fashions themselves playing December football, it matters. You got to beat the Commanders this week at home. You got to beat the Colts next week at home and go into your bye with a chance and the Giants on tap.
You've talked about their season as if it's still meaningful in a way that I don't think they're doing even in Foxborough.
But I'm just saying those are winnable games the next 2 weeks.
I mean, we've worked them.
Sure. Can they be?
For a reason.
I'm not saying they're going to win them both, but they're not Titanic situation.
No, can they beat bad teams? Can Belichick still do the thing where he takes advantage of an inexperienced quarterback? I guess you find those out, but I have a hard time with the Patriots favored over anyone. I'm actually surprised because I look at these two teams and I think, well, the Commanders are a better team. Their ups have been way higher. I mean, I'd take Sam Howell over Mac Jones right now. I don't even think that's
higher upside.
Yep. A question. In terms of his high-level play.
Yep.
I've liked what I've seen out of Christian Barmore, but I don't know. Yeah, in terms of the Belichick, is he going to get another season or not? These types of games do matter because I looked at their schedule. I think of the 8 first games, you know, 5 have been against the Bills, Dolphins, Jets, and Cowboys, which are, you know, 4 of the better, best teams in the NFL. And then down the stretch, they only have like 2 of those games. So now they're playing more teams that are closer to their level, but I don't assume anything. I think I'd take the Commanders.
I think you lose Kendrick Bourne. They put up 218 total yards a week ago, a flurry of 3-and-outs. Mac Jones is totally, talk about another quarterback that's like, I don't think Mac Jones is their starter next year. I mean, a lot will change between now and then, but this is one of the worst teams in the league. And if it's so important for Bill Belichick to show something, deadline comes and goes and they don't do a single thing. I get that probably like this wasn't like a, hey, we're in buyer's mode. But I just saw a team that just like Josh McDaniels out in Vegas, which is completely inactive.
That's kind of why I still don't think he's in danger. I think Mac Jones being just a guy, a supreme just a guy so far, for the most part in his career after that first year is like, helps Belichick because I think he's going to be the guy that goes, and then I think Belichick gets one more quarterback to try to do something.
Right. Well, we have nine games. If they win, if they go 4-13, I think you'll feel different.
But I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I think that I don't think he's maybe Belichick's not the same coach he was, but I don't think he's like a liability. I think he will win games like this. I think he'll win at least one of these games and maybe both. And they're going to end up winning around 6 or 7.
Well, then they should put up some points. Because to me, this season, is in terms of the Commanders being disappointed, is about Ron Rivera's defense. I thought it was very telling that he was basically made to trade these guys off of his defense. Because you invested all this in the defensive line, and you're still 29th in defense. So we don't like your plan anymore. It's not working. The defense has not been good enough. Sam Howell, actually, on balance, has been good enough. Think about how well he played in those 2 Eagles games. He played more than well enough to win, and they could have won both. If the defense was good, they'd be 5-3, and they'd be quite a story.
Yeah, if you're Howell, like, what? All I'm really asking from a young quarterback is be watchable, make some plays, and, like, he does both. I hated Ron Rivera having to answer obvious questions about the trades, and he used the line to, well, this was an opportunity to see what else we have. You didn't want to do that. Like, you have no power, and you're about 9 weeks from being thrown out the front door.
Sam Howell's been sacked 41 times this year.
Only once last week, though.
Even with the only one last week, the next closest guy has been sacked 28 times, which is Daniel Jones, who hasn't played in a couple weeks. So those guys
got rid of the ball really quickly last week. Maybe something clicked. I don't know if it was the game plan or the opponent, but his time to throw was
kind of tells me he's durable, though, if he can be sacked that many times and not go out. There's a positive in there, maybe. I don't know.
Sure. Or he's a ticking time bomb and the clavicle's
David's clavicle's
like, I can't take much more of this.
He doesn't seem like in shock and awe mode, though.
David Carr was not looking at it as a positive when he took those 76 sacks. So Sam Howell, the David Carr Sam Howell watch is on because he's still, I believe, on pace.
Oh, good. Well, not good. Terrible, in fact. Rooting for that kid. All right, those are all of the games. And remember that on Sunday night, we recap all the games we just talked about, save one Monday night. That gets its own thing. Until Sunday, heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.